Hi, everyone. Courtney here. I'm reaching out to you because I need a huge favor. If you haven't done so already and you love the show, make sure you leave us a 5-star rating with a review. Reviews are one of the best ways you can help support the show and help get Forensic Tales out there to other true crime listeners. It takes just about a minute, but makes the biggest difference for the show. Okay, let's get to the episode. Forensic Tales discusses topics that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. If you were around in the 1970s in the United States, chances are you've eaten at a Burger Chef restaurant at least once. An American fast food chain known for some of the greasiest yet satisfying food. But it's not just greasy food and tasty burgers that Burger Chef is remembered for. In November 1978 in Speedway, Indiana, it became known as a place where a horrible quadruple homicide occurred. Murders that would leave us scratching our heads even 4 decades later. This is Forensic Tales, episode number 45, The Burger Chef Murders. Welcome to Forensic Tales. I'm your host, Courtney Fretwell. Forensic Tales is a weekly true crime podcast that discusses real, bone-chilling true crime stories and how forensic science has been used in the case. Some cases have been solved through cutting-edge forensic techniques, while other cases remain unsolved. If you're interested in supporting the show and getting access to exclusive content and bonus material, consider visiting our Patreon page, patreon.com/forensictales. Every contribution to the show, big or small, helps me to continue to produce the true crime content you love. Please consider supporting the show on Patreon. Now, let's jump right into this week's episode. Hey, Forensic Tales listeners. Our story this week is yet another cold case sitting on the shelf, collecting dust, just waiting to be cracked wide open by forensic science. The Burger Chef murders has remained unsolved for over 40 years, leaving many of us to question whether this case will ever be solved. Chances are, if you're a millennial like me, you've never heard of Burger Chef. But if you're into true crime, chances are you know that the Burger Chef restaurant chain is home to one of the most notorious unsolved murders our country has ever seen. Back in the late 1970s, Burger Chef was the leading all-American fast food chain, serving up some of the greasiest yet delicious food. If you were craving a late-night snack or just something to satisfy your burger itch, Burger Chef was the spot. I have a feeling if Burger Chef was around during my college years, it would have definitely been my kind of spot. During its peak operations, Burger Chef had almost 1,100 locations spread out all across the United States, and they were serving thousands upon thousands of American families each and every single day. On the menu, the Big Chef Burger and the Super Chef Burger. November 17th, 1978, was supposed to be just a regular chilly night in the city of Speedway, Indiana. Speedway, Indiana is a wholesome town, just over 12,000 people, located on the outskirts of Indianapolis. It's a town that's not supposed to be known for unsolved cold cases. Back in November 1978, Thanksgiving was just a few days away, and if you didn't feel like cooking dinner, you'd stop by the Burger Chef restaurant located at 5725 Crawford Road and order that Big Chef burger with cheese. A few minutes after midnight, November 17th, a teenage boy pulled into the Burger Chef's restaurant parking lot. The teenager had been a longtime employee of the fast food chain and decided he wanted to go see if his coworkers were gone for the night. When he pulled his car into the parking lot, he noticed that the Burger Chef's lights were still on. A little strange, he thought. Maybe his coworkers were still inside cleaning up. Sometimes the closing procedures took longer than other nights. Maybe they had some last-minute customers to serve. And maybe this was just one of those nights. He parked his car and turned off the engine. He walked up to the back door of the restaurant, the door that the employees went in and out of while on the clock. The back door was open. Now, this is really strange, he thought. When he got inside, instead of seeing his coworkers, he saw that the cash register doors were left wide open and on the floor, and there was nobody there. He also saw that the money safe was open, something that was never allowed. Maybe his coworkers just forgot to close the safe up and lock the door when they left. With a burning feeling in the pit of his stomach, the teenager knew that something wasn't right. So he listened to his gut and called the police. When police arrived at the Burger Chef, they right away notified the restaurant's manager about a possible robbery. The manager came and calculated that $581 in cash was missing from the restaurant safe, a relatively low amount, an amount that didn't raise any alarm bells. The first thought by the police and the restaurant manager was that the three teenagers and one 20-year-old working that night pocketed the money, took the cash, and went out for a joyride. There weren't any signs of a struggle inside the restaurant. Nothing appeared to be damaged. What was unusual, though, was that there were two female purses found inside of the restaurant. A little strange if the teenagers stole the money, drove off, and then just left their purses behind. But still, the police and the manager chopped the whole thing up to the teenagers, decided not to launch an informal investigation that night. They didn't collect any evidence, didn't take any photos. The police simply walked away and waited for the employees to come back and explain themselves. The problem was, the teenagers never came back to offer up an explanation. On the night of November 17th, 1978, Burger Chef had four people on staff for that closing shift. 20-year-old assistant manager Jane Freight, 16-year-old Daniel Davis, 17-year-old Ruth Ellen Shelton, and 16-year-old Mark Flemons. Jane was the oldest employee working that night. She was described as a girl with a heart of gold. Daniel, just 16 years old, was a talented photographer. Mark was the stylish one, one who was friendly to everybody he met. And Ruth had a love for music, a girl with her own creative side. Even though the police chopped this one up to a joyride, the manager had some second thoughts about this theory. He knew his employees really well. These four, in particular, They were good kids. Not the type of people to just steal money from the restaurant and run away with it. And the manager just couldn't get over what he saw inside the restaurant. Inside the restaurant were two purses, one belonging to his assistant manager, Jane. Jane wasn't the type of girl, in fact, I don't know any girl who would just leave their purse behind, at least not on purpose. Jane had never clocked out from her shift and then just left her purse behind. And besides the purses, there were also a couple jackets belonging to the employees just left behind in the break room. Items that you would only leave behind if you didn't know you weren't coming back. And what about the restaurant's back door? Why would they just leave the back door unlocked, knowing that their purses are inside and many of their personal belongings are still there? Things just really didn't add up here. The following morning, Saturday, November 18th, the opening crew of the Burger Chef arrived for their shift. And because the police cleared the restaurant the night before, these employees were allowed inside of the restaurant where they clocked in, they got ready for the day, and they began their opening cleaning procedures. Any forensic evidence that would have been left behind was completely destroyed. The police hadn't even taken a single photograph before the entire place was squeaky clean. A mistake that would forever change the course of the investigation. The families of the four Burger Chef employees waited for them to show up on Saturday. But as the clock ticked and the hours went by, with no sign of Jane, Daniel, Mark, or Ruth, the families began to worry. Where were they? And why haven't they shown up yet? John and Rachel Shelton, the parents of Ruth Ellen, waited by the phone for any update about where their daughter might be. They knew it was only a matter of time before the local media caught wind that four Burger Chef employees were missing and that their daughter was one of them. Robert Flemons, the father of 17-year-old Mark, remembered a chilling conversation he had with his son. He remembered that while watching a kidnapping scene on television, Mark turned to his father and said, "I couldn't lay still and just die." A conversation that didn't seem to mean anything at the time, until now, when his very own son is missing. By Saturday afternoon, Jane's blue and white Chevy Vega was found parked across town with no sign of the assistant manager. The car appeared to have been abandoned. With the discovery of the car, coupled with the realization that the four employees still hadn't turned up, this was a first clear sign that maybe the employees weren't the ones who stole the money. Maybe this was a robbery turned kidnapping. That the Burger Chef employees weren't the thieves. They were actually the victims. When Saturday afternoon came around, police no longer suspected the employees of stealing the money. They started to fear that the employees may have been abducted or kidnapped while closing up the restaurant the night before. Maybe they went to the back door to throw away the trash and were picked up. Nobody knew. But what they did know was that this wasn't going to have a happy ending. On Sunday afternoon, just 2 days after the employees were last seen, a couple made a shocking discovery 35 minutes away from the Burger Chef restaurant. The couple discovered the bodies of four people still dressed in their Burger Chef uniforms. Their bodies were discovered in the neighboring county of Johnson County on a heavily wooded property. This was some 30 minutes away from the Burger Chef location. Whoever was responsible kidnapped the employees, drove them off the main road and onto a gravel path, completely obscured from any other car that would have been driving by. Forensic experts concluded that 16-year-old Daniel Davis and 17-year-old Ruth Shelton had been shot execution style with a .38 caliber gun. They were both lying face down, side by side to each other. Jane's body was found about 75 yards away. She'd been stabbed twice in the chest. She had been stabbed with such brute force that the handle of the knife had broken completely off, and the blade was later recovered during her autopsy. But the handle of the knife has never been found. And finally, 16-year-old Mark Flemons had been bludgeoned with a chain. But it wasn't the bludgeoning that killed him. He died from choking to death on his very own blood after the brutal and savage attack on him and his coworkers. Mark's body was discovered several yards away from his coworkers, right near the main road. A theory emerged based on the forensic evidence that Mark initially survived the attack and was somehow able to escape whoever the attacker or attackers were. And while trying to get away, trying to escape, he accidentally ran into a tree, causing him to knock himself out. Another theory is that he tried running away, fell down while trying to get out, just a few feet away from the road. Either way, either theory, Mark didn't die right away. He fought and almost got away. All four Burger Chef employees had been murdered in cold blood. What noticeably stood out to investigators was that nothing was stolen from any of the victims. Most of them, when their bodies were discovered, they still had the jewelry on them. They still had their wallets in their pockets. In fact, all the wallets had money inside of them. It was obvious that the motive wasn't financial. It wasn't money these offenders were after. The location of all four employees now became the second crime scene. Investigators knew they completely messed up in the first crime scene, the Burger Chef restaurant itself. But this second crime scene was really where there was a lot of potential for valuable DNA or forensic evidence. If there was any location that had possible forensic evidence linking these murders to a possible suspect, this was it. This second crime scene could be where the case is solved. However, just like the restaurant itself, investigators who worked on the case compromised whatever forensic evidence existed around the bodies. And when I say compromised, I mean some of these police officers literally drove through the areas that should have been sealed off. There was speculation later on that some of the bodies had been moved even before the coroner got there. And from an evidence recovery perspective, this was a complete and utter disaster. If these investigators were in crime scene investigation 101, they would have failed miserably. So the discovery of the bodies left one burning question on everybody's mind. Who would kill four innocent people? Four innocent people who all worked the closing shift at the local burger chef. The murders didn't appear to be purely financially motivated. Only $581 was stolen from the restaurant. They also left behind over $100 in coins inside of the restaurant. So they clearly didn't take the time to get all of the money. And the killer or killers also left behind two of the girls' purses with their wallets still inside. And when their bodies were discovered, nothing of any sort of value appeared to have been stolen. So if the motive wasn't financial, what could possibly be the motive to commit a quadruple homicide of people all under the age of 20? Who in the world could be capable of something like this? Shortly after the bodies of the Burger Chef employees were discovered, a 16-year-old teenager came up to police as a possible witness. The teenager reported to police that he saw two men parked outside the Burger Chef restaurant just moments before closing time. The teenager described the men as being white. Both were somewhere in their 30s. One of the men had a big bushy beard, while the other one was cleanly shaven. This description provided by the 16-year-old teenager became the only solid eyewitness sighting of the possible killer or killers. So shortly after the eyewitness description was released to the public, a man inside of a bar in the city of Greenwood bragged about being responsible for the Burger Chef murders. Maybe this was the break in the case everyone was waiting for. But as quickly as everyone's hopes were raised, they came crashing back down to the ground. And that's because the man who came forward claiming responsibility had absolutely nothing to do with the murders. He was simply a guy who wanted his 2 minutes of fame. He even passed a police polygraph, essentially putting the nail in the coffin that this is not the guy. He did, however, provide police with the names of a couple guys who were a part of this so-called fast food robbery gang. So police tracked down two of the men named in this gang, and when investigators laid their eyes on them, they were an almost perfect match to the teenager's eyewitness sighting. This could finally be it. One of the men had a freshly shaven face. The other, the same exact beard that the teenager described from the Burger Chef's parking lot the same night of the murders. This was really looking good for investigators. But both men, although they looked the part, weren't their suspects. Both men, who were, in fact, fast food robbers, didn't know there was such a thing, but they were. They were people that specifically targeted fast food restaurants to rob. These two men had nothing to do with the Burger Chef murders. And without any physical or forensic evidence linking these guys to the murders, there was really nothing left to do but let both of them go and go back to waiting for another break in the case. Once the two men were cleared, a possible theory emerged. Investigators wondered if the suspects intended to rob the Burger Chef, even though it was a crummy job, but graduated to kidnap and murder because one of the employees recognized them. And here's why this was a strong theory. 16-year-old Mark Flemons wasn't supposed to work on the night of November 17th. Mark wasn't supposed to be at the restaurant at all that night. He picked up the closing shift completely last minute. One of his coworkers needed the night off, and he was nice enough to cover the shift. Of course, a decision that would ultimately cost him his life. But because Mark wasn't supposed to be there the night of the murders, investigators working the case started to theorize that maybe by Mark being there, this threw the suspects off. They weren't expecting him to be inside the restaurant, and it was Mark as the one who recognized one of the guys, causing this to go from a robbery to a kidnapping and then eventually murder. Also, keep in mind, Mark was killed in a very different way than his coworkers. He wasn't shot. He wasn't stabbed like the others. He was beaten and actually got away. His body was found several hundred yards away from the rest of them, right near the road. So this opened up the possibility that the suspects may have singled him out in some sort of way. The Burger Chef murders weren't the only tragedy that struck the Speedway, Indiana community. Earlier that year, 65-year-old Speedway resident Julia Schiffers received a knock at her front door. She answered the door and saw a man she didn't know or recognize. Actually, she had never seen this person before. The man asked about some items she was selling in a recent garage sale that she had. So she let the man into her garage. And while she had her back turned, the man pulls out a gun and shoots her, execution style, right in the back of the head, killing her instantly. In September 1978, just 2 months before the Burger Chef murders, what would be known as the Speedway bombings rocked the entire community. For 6 days, there were a series of 8 bombings throughout Speedway, Indiana. And these coordinated bombings were orchestrated by Brett Kimberlin, who at the time was a pretty controversial political activist back in the 1970s. And during the bombings, explosives were placed throughout the city in places like trash cans and just other mundane places. But even though there were 8 separate explosions over the course of 6 days, luckily, nobody was killed and only 2 people suffered any sort of injuries. Kimberlin was ultimately arrested for the Speedway bombings and he was sentenced to 50 years in federal prison. Now, the Speedway bombings had a completely different MO than the Burger Chef murders. And it was later determined that the bombings had 0 connection to the murders. But some people in Speedway, Indiana, just couldn't help but wonder if they were in fact connected somehow. In the Burger Chef investigation, the weeks turned into months, with still so many unanswered questions. By now, the entire country, not just Speedway, Indiana, wanted to know who was responsible for the murders and why. Over the next several years, many years after these families had to lay their children to rest, investigators continue to receive tips about who the Burger Chef murder was or murderers. In fact, law enforcement received tips about possible suspects in Cincinnati, other suspects in Milwaukee and Chicago. Even as far as Dallas, Texas, police were getting leads in the case. But none of the leads really panned out to be much. Just as quickly as the lead would come across the detective's desk, it would fall off and be put in the trash. Nobody had any really solid connection to the kidnapping and murders. And it wasn't just the suspects that police couldn't locate. Law enforcement was never able to recover either the gun used in the murders, they couldn't find the handle of the knife, and they couldn't locate the chain. All of the murder weapons vanished with their suspects. Now, the murder weapons in the case would be really beneficial to the investigation. We could see who the gun was registered to and maybe draw some connections to a possible suspect that way. We could examine the handle of the knife for possible fingerprints belonging to somebody. We could swab the chain for DNA or trace evidence. A lot could be learned from a forensic perspective just from the murder weapons alone. But none of them were ever recovered either at the restaurant or where the bodies were found. And to this day, we've never been able to recover these items. So the biggest update in the murders came in 1984. A man by the name of Donald Forrester, who was in federal prison serving a 95-year sentence for rape. Forrester called into police saying that he was willing to confess to the Burger Chef murders in exchange for being transferred to another prison facility. At first, this phone call was really promising. Donald Forrester was living in Speedway at the time of the murders. He had a criminal record the length of a phone book. And at the time of the murders, he wasn't in prison. He was out. So Forrester was transferred to Marion County, Indiana, and agreed to sit down with investigators working the Burger Chef murders case. He got right in front of authorities and admitted to them that he was the one that shot Daniel Davis and Ruth Ellen Shelton that night. He even voluntarily took detectives out to where the bodies were discovered, showed them where each body was. Even more bone-chilling, he told detectives about the knife's broken handle. This was a detail that was never publicly released until many years later. According to Forrester, there were three other men with him that night. In his story, the whole thing started because Jane, the assistant manager on shift that night, her older brother, James, owed money in a previous drug deal. So Forrester and these three other men showed up to the Burger Chef to confront her, to scare her in some sort of way. But Jane's coworkers weren't just going to sit back and let these men threaten her. So according to Forrester, it was actually Mark Flemons who stepped in and a fight broke out. Forrester and the three other men then decided to abduct and kill all four employees to eliminate the possibility of any witnesses. He even led police to a river where he claimed that after the murders, they drove by the river and they tossed the .38 caliber gun used to kill them. But when police pulled all their resources to search the river up and down for this gun, they found no evidence of the weapon. Forrester's ex-wife also sat down with detectives working the murder case, and she told an even more chilling story. She said that she drove with her ex-husband to a wooded area where the two of them collected shell casings together. She never asked him why or what exactly they were doing. She said she just went along with it. They then took the shell casings back home and flushed them down the toilet. But just like the story about throwing the gun in the river, when the police searched the entire septic tank where the casings would have been sent, they found nothing. But regardless, this all looks really, really good. Police were thinking they had this guy, Donald Forrester, and three other men who were with him that night. But as good as this looks, there were some serious problems with his story. His story had holes that nobody could patch up. As soon as the sheriff's department leaked details about Forrester's cooperation in the murders, he did a complete 180. He completely recanted his confession. He said that he had absolutely nothing to do with the murders. That essentially he made the entire thing up. He even went as far to say that his confession was actually coerced by the police. There was also a huge problem with the timing of his admission. Donald Forrester came forward with his story basically in order to prevent being transferred to a facility that was pretty much designated for the worst of the worst, and he didn't want to go there. And when he found out that he was still going to be transferred to this new facility anyway, he didn't want any part of the confession and the murders. But besides the fact that this offender, this federal inmate, recanted his story, there was no physical or forensic evidence linking him to the Burger Chef case. Nothing. Everything Forrester claimed was thoroughly investigated, and nothing they found really warranted any further investigation. If Donald Forrester had anything to do with the murders, we will never hear from him directly again. And that's because he died back in 2006 at the age of 55 while in federal prison. So we will never hear from him again. As the years have gone by and the years have slowly turned into decades, people that were once thought to be involved in the murders have died. The man from Greenwood who bragged inside of that bar about being the murderer, well, he died from an apparent suicide. The man with the same exact beard as the eyewitness described seeing that night, well, he died of a heart attack. So it's now been over four decades since the Burger Chef murders, and the case still very much remains open. Just 2 years ago, in November 2018, just so happened to be the 40th anniversary of the murders, police released the image of the knife used to stab Jane. Remember, the knife broke. The blade was lodged in her body, but the handle of the knife has never been recovered. So police were hopeful that the image of the broken blade might just jog someone's memory and call in a tip, even all of these years later. At the same time, back in November 2018, police also released to the public the official timeline of events that they believed happened that night. Now, because the restaurant had been wiped clean the day after the employees were kidnapped, and because where the bodies were recovered had been poorly investigated, we don't have much in the way of any kind of evidence. We don't have DNA. We don't have hair. We don't have any other trace evidence belonging to any third party. And because it's been over 40 years, we run the risk that the killers or killers may have passed away and will never be brought to justice. When we attempt to establish a criminal profile, we have to consider the likelihood that more than one offender is responsible here. It's more likely that we're looking for more than one offender because we're talking about four victims, all of which were kidnapped, transported some 30 minutes away from the restaurant, and were killed in three different ways. That's a difficult task for one offender to take on. The likelihood that one person could be successful at this is pretty low. We're looking at least two people responsible for the murders, possibly more. And there was no evidence, physical or forensic, inside the restaurant suggesting a struggle. No other DNA was discovered at the dump site. things we'd expect to find if whoever was responsible was involved in some sort of struggle. If it was 1 versus 4, we'd expect at least one of the employees to at least attempt to strike back or to fight back. But when we think about 2, 3, maybe 4 offenders, it's unlikely that the employees had any real chance at survival. So despite the hours upon hours of investigative work, the Burger Chef murders remain unsolved and, frankly, wide open. Over 4 decades, not a single person has been arrested or charged with a quadruple homicide. Investigators from 5 different law enforcement agencies have worked the case over the years. Many of the investigators have since retired, some have passed away, leaving so many people wondering if this case will ever be solved. For the people who lived in Speedway, Indiana, and the greater Indianapolis area in 1978, this is a case that still haunts their nightmares. It's almost too heartbreaking to comprehend the loss that these families have suffered. And with so many burning, unanswered questions. Was this a robbery gone wrong? Were the employees caught completely off guard while taking out the trash? Was it a part of a drug deal? Was it simply to take a little over $500 in cash? The Burger Chef murders remain one of the most notorious, brutal, senseless murders the state of Indiana has ever seen. Since the 1978 Burger Chef murders at 5725 Crawfordville Road, the fast food chain has permanently closed its doors, having been replaced by a loan provider company, Cashland, which also closed its doors. Those locked doors also hold the truth about what really happened to Jane Fright, Daniel Davis, Mark Flemons, and Ruth Ellen Shelton. Forensic Tales is a Rockefeller Audio production. The show is written and produced by me, Courtney Fretwell. For a small monthly contribution, you can gain access to bonus content and be one of the first to listen to new episodes. Or, if you simply want to support the show, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/forensictales. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Forensic Tales. Leaving us a rating with a review greatly helps support the show. Forensic Tales is a podcast made possible by our Patreon producers, Tony A., Nicole L., William R., Joseph F., David B., Amanda M., and Katrina G. If you'd like to become a producer of the show, head to our Patreon page or email me at courtney@forensictales.com to find out how you can become involved. Please join me next week. We release a new episode every Monday. Until then, remember, not all stories have happy endings.